When were you last in Guam?
I was last there in 2010. Mm-hmm. So it was actually, I was brought there by the Guam Humanities Council. It was when my second book was published. And so they were doing a program called like community conversations, basically like civic engagement. And what they were doing is bringing artists and writers and chanters and having us speak about militarization in Guam, because this was kind of when a lot of the conversations around the military buildup was happening.
By whom?
By, well, the U.S. military was is doing a buildup on Guam as part of the like Pacific Pivot. And so the Guam Humanities Council were doing a bunch of community conversations where, you know, so for example, when I was there, I would perform some of my poetry that discussed militarization. And then we would have like community conversations afterwards about the poetry, but also about the issues. So I visited a bunch of like public high schools, gave readings, and like kind of facilitated conversations.
What was that like?
That was very transformative as well, because that was the first time I had been back in 15 years. And, you know, being back to launch my book was exciting enough.
The name of that book?
It's From Unincorporated Territory, Sina. And Sina means parent or elder. And the main theme in that book is, as well, is militarization. And so it was interesting to be back home, but to be back home as a poet who's engaging with these political issues, who's not just there to kind of perform, but who's also there to help facilitate conversation about these issues. So thinking about how, you know, how poetry, how the arts, how the humanities can really open up a new space for us to discuss and difficult issues.
How were you connecting with that issue from the U.S.? You were living in California?
I was living in California at the time. Well, in a couple different ways. I mean, pretty much every family on Guam has a member in the military, have some of the highest enlistment rates in the U.S. And so pretty much every family is impacted by the history of militarization. My father is a veteran. My grandfather's, most of my uncles. In this new book, I talk about how I almost joined the military after high school. And so it's always been something that's, it's part of every Chamorro's life, no matter where you live. And most Chamorros who move away from Guam move because of military service. So we moved to places like San Diego or Fairfield or Long Beach or Tacoma, kind of around military bases. And so, so that's part of it. I just have this long history with militarization.
Were you connected with those, with the Guam? God, is that a real word, Guamanian?
It is a real word. Which we make fun of a lot, of course.
But what would you call that diaspora?
Chamorro diaspora.
Chamorro diaspora.
Yeah, so kind of our indigenous name.
Yeah.
Yes, and that was the second point I was going to get to. So I started working with kind of diasporic Chamorro cultural and activist groups around 2006. And particularly one based in the California Bay Area, so like Berkeley, San Francisco, where I was living at the time, where there are a lot of Chamorros there too.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where it started. We did a lot of community events, kind of raising awareness about the military buildup was the big issue that came up back in 2006.
Is this issue of militarism a connective force?
Definitely. I mean, it impacts everywhere. I mean, you know, U.S. militarization in Africa is a huge problem, in places like, of course, Puerto Rico, you know, other places in the Pacific as well, in Asia. And, you know, different histories than Guam, different situations, but it's definitely kind of global militarism is something that links a lot of people. And, of course, militarization is connected to climate change, and so that also...
What's that connection?
Well, the U.S. military and militaries around the world being the largest emitters of carbon, because it's such a carbon-driven industry, both the making of the weapons, you know, the transport of the weapons or the ships, and, you know, just the burning of fuel that occurs from, you know, carriers, from aircrafts, from tanks, from the movement of soldiers around the world.
Just to hear your voice list those things, I know what it's like trying to make poetry where you're haranguing people with all these awful facts. So how you What you gonna do?
I don't write about flowers much, let's say that. Or at least I write about the pollutants that are killing all the flowers. Okay. Well, for me, it's all about personalizing this information and personalizing the impacts that militarization has had on, you know, my people in general, but also my family in particular. So I write a lot about family stories that are kind of within the context of that larger history. You know, I write about my own stories of migration and of struggling with how to, like, deal with, you know, the fact that I almost joined the military, or that my dad is a veteran, or that, you know, so many members of my family are either in the military or benefit from, you know, military contracts or the military economy.
Do they not really appreciate your activism?
I have many, I won't say many, but several relatives that don't talk to me anymore because of my politics and because of my poetry. And, of course, that's, you know, that's very difficult emotionally, but politically, it's important for me to not kind of be shaken by that, because I know that's, you know, once you start bringing up these traumatic histories and these difficult truths, not everyone is going to agree with you, and even the people closest to you, you know, will kind of resist a lot of, you know, resist wanting to hear those truths because they benefit in some way from it, or because they've been so deeply traumatized that they're just not in the space to think about it. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, kind of poetry as a way to kind of talk about these issues in a way that's not just fact-driven or completely objective or emotionless, I think, kind of does open up a small space to have those kind of deeper emotional connections.
How do you keep writing? You have a baby.
16-month-old baby who's walking and running and climbing, driving us crazy. It's hard to stop, to be honest. I think, you know, I think that's true for a lot of Pacific writers, where we write not only because we're creative people and we like to make things, but we write also because poetry and literature is a part of our cultural revitalization. It's a part of, you know, decolonization movements. It's a part of inspiring others and empowering ourselves and kind of reinforcing, you know, the idea that Pacific peoples, you know, we are human beings and we are dignified and we have worth and we have stories that are important that people need to hear. And so there's all this other kind of motivation to keep writing, even if I only find like an hour a day when baby goes to sleep or when, you know, my wife is taking baby for a walk or something. You know, I was like, okay, I must do this because it's a deeper mission. It's not just, you know, not just art for art's sake, but it has other kind of values.
You know, what would you like your students to know about creative writing?
You know, taking the work seriously, being creative, finding their purpose and their voice, and then, you know, finding the courage to kind of share that with other people and see what happens.
In all those different forms.
Exactly.
In all the contemporary forms.
Exactly. They know these technologies more than I do, so I'm like, you know, they can record their poems on YouTube, and it's another way to get their voices out there. And I think the youth voices matter so much. And it's so important for them to feel they're valuable, but then for us, you know, teachers and other adults to kind of see where they're at.
Yeah.
You know, my poetry can be considered like avant-garde or experimental. And what that really means is that the way I tell stories or write poems is not necessarily like a linear, predictable arc. And so I write a lot in kind of fragmented storylines. I collage together lots of different types of story, different kinds of discourses or materials. You know, in some ways, in ecological terms, it's kind of like a compost where all these things are kind of mixing together and forming these different kinds of poetic compounds, yeah. And, you know, for me, writing through like fragments or through excerpts, telling stories in that way, kind of reflects my own experience, both with memory, trying to think about memories. I have a home when I've been away from so long. It's never like a complete, perfect picture. It always comes in these little moments. And then also, you know, writing through like excerpts, like little moments at a time is also how I feel as a migrant, where, you know, part of me is here in Hawaii, but part of me is also in California, and part of me is back home in Guam. And so what I try to do is to have the form embody those emotions or those perceptions. And so that's where you get a lot of this brokenness in the work, fragmentation, kind of, as a reader, you might feel lost at certain moments, because that's often how I feel in my own life. And part of the reading experience is kind of navigation, right? As a reader and as a writer, is kind of navigating, you know, these moments in life, these kind of difficult histories, these traumatic moments, these great distances between, you know, spaces that we've lived, and trying to like pull it all back together, trying to harvest whatever meaning we can gather. And it's never perfect and it's never complete, but I think it's a testament to kind of at least to my own life experiences, and perhaps the experiences of other Chamorros, other Pacific Islanders who live in diaspora, who have been affected by, you know, militarism or colonialism or other kinds of things that are tearing our peoples apart.
I think it's something about, I really can't wait to just dive into this whole book, because I have a feeling something about those fragments shifting and the way there's something consonant about the subject and the form.
In terms of diving, it's like diving into like a wreckage, really, because you'll get down there and you see all these, you know, you see the coral, but maybe some of the coral is dying, and you see the wreckages from wars that are in the bottom, you know, of the sea still there. You see certain kinds of other things that maybe you're not prepared for.
Fragments.
So I like that diving is interesting. Diving into the wreck.
Saying that about your own book.
The book's a wreck. But that's life.